Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on the Holderness Family Podcast, Happy Mother's Day!
In honor of Mother's Day.
Kim's mom is in the house and she has a lot of stories.
The most important thing is both people absolutely have to feel comfortable that they're being heard.
Including those about Kim's ex-boyfriends.
Mm-hmm. First rule is you never date a man with better hair than you.
All of a sudden, like he was doing his scales and they sounded like...
And she has some really great advice for moms. So you need to try out marriage counselors, just like you try out a new pair of sneakers, for goodness sakes.
Our default is we try to give each other the benefit of the doubt.
Because we're terrified of each other.
You can't divorce proof a marriage, but if you could, we're trying real hard.
And away we go.
Happy Mother's Day week. I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Penn Holderness. We are that YouTube, Facebook parody video family that you may or may not be familiar with.
And if this is your first time listening, thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Welcome.
This is a little bit different. We're going to, you know, we still try to laugh and have fun and poke fun at all of our many shortcomings and talk about our family and our marriage. But it's a little bit longer form. We love the podcast format because it gives us a chance to think and also to try to be better as human beings. And we thank you for being part of this voyage. And we ask you to hit the subscribe button, please.
We love it when you subscribe. It helps other people find us. And then that way kind of goes to your phone and you can listen and be reminded. This is a very special episode.
It is. So... probably the most important person in your life besides me is your mother, correct?
My mother.
She may be more important. I'm okay to say that.
Stop it. No. My mother is the person I call with good news, the person I call with bad news. My mother is just, she's like my person, and I feel so lucky to have her in my life. And we had her in town. She came up. She's a good Grammy, and she flew up to see Lola's drama performance. And we're like, hey, while you're here, we're going to stick a microphone in front of your face. So without much warning, we interviewed.
It's so funny putting microphones in front of people who aren't usually used to them, especially if the microphones are as big as the one that I put in front of Peggy. I think she felt like she was being invaded a little bit.
Yeah, no, but she did a great job.
No, she did a great job.
And she has such wisdom, and which is why she is the person I call when things go, you know, when things go weird. Like she's my person. So she gives such great advice and always has such great perspective for me, for mothers in general. But I think it's worth noting. So we're interviewing my mom, who's in town, and she's wonderful. Penn's mom is an equally amazing, impactful human being. In fact, there's people, we go around town and they're like, oh, you're related to Mary Holderness? Like she's a superstar. But we have mentioned in this podcast a few times, oh my God, that, why am I crying? Penn's mom's amazing. She has, she's advancing through Alzheimer's. And she's now living in an amazing place where she's like the prom queen of that place. And people are taking such good care of her, but she's not talking. much.
Right. She can start thoughts and she has a little bit of trouble finishing them. You can tell that she wants to say something right. and she can't always say it. She was the, like, if we have a chance to talk about my mom, she was the epitome of a mother who basically said, okay, I'm going to stop what I'm doing now. And I'm going to spend the next 18 years of my life making sure that my kids, are successful and make sure that they're loved and make sure that they get everything that they need to succeed. Mm-hmm. If that's her. She was yeah. amazing. She is, I mean, I know people tell me I have my dad's eyes and that I have my dad's like personality, but 90% of the work, because my dad was gone so much and he was a preacher who worked 100-hour weeks, was my mom. I'm 90% my mom. So yeah. if you want to get to know her, get to know me.
Yeah.
I would say. But she can't talk in complete sentences the way that she used to be able to. And that's just what happens. That's the season of her life that she's in right now. By the way, she can sing in like perfect pitch and harmony any song that she's learned before. So I know that there's something great, obviously still in there.
And so that's a beautiful thing that Penn has done, is that when we visit her, like, he'll bring his guitar. So the weird magical thing about a brain is, though, if you lose the ability to speak, you can still make music and you can still sing. And yeah. so Penn will sing with her, and it is like the sweetest, most wonderful moments ever.
Yeah. So shout out to my mom. I love you. She has been nothing but.
She's
been nothing but loyal, faithful, and hardworking toward her family. It's really all that she, it's a lot of what she did and a lot of what she was as a person. And now what she is as a person is basically the prom queen at a memory care unit in North Raleigh, where everybody absolutely adores her. And it's her comfort zone. And it's where she needs to be. And at this point, kind of where she wants to be.
Yeah. And people have asked. Yeah. People have asked, like, because we have mentioned like little bits and pieces of this, like, oh, you should talk about, you know, should you do a podcast on like caring for aging parents. I don't think we are flailing through this process
yeah.
in terms of we know that she is in the best place possible, but it took us like a minute to figure that out. And I think we should probably be in some sort of family support for that, because it's, you know, there are moments where it's really tough to process. Why is it harder for me to process than like you can talk about it without crying, and I can't talk about it without crying.
Because about 4 years ago, I had to become the hammer when it came to a lot of these conversations with my family, and I had to start thinking about love and how that. I had to start thinking about love and how that can coexist with understanding rational and irrational thought.
What does that mean?
It means that not too long ago, I had to be the person in this family that separates emotion and says, this is a parent that is not acting rationally, and so I have to respond as this with love and with grace, but in a somewhat calculated format to make this work, to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean I don't have those feelings. Like I've cried and I've stared at walls and I've had panic attacks and I've had stress, and it's all happened to me. But I think maybe the thing is that I'm the one who's had to talk about it the most.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of used to talking about it.
You're more practiced. Yeah. Well,
and I'm also honestly, like, I'm grateful. Like I'm one of the reasons I'm not sitting here crying right now is because she's in the best possible place.
Gosh.
Like, we got her to the best possible place,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, along with all the sadness that goes with dementia and just forgetting, not only the people around you, but kind of who you are. If you can find a safe place to do that, to live the remainder of your days, then, you should count your blessings and feel so grateful. Yeah. And so that's maybe that's what it is.
Okay. And on Mother's Day, we will find the very best way to honor her, because I'm so grateful for her, because she raised you. And she raised two boys that are so respectful and of women. Like, and because I think because she was the boss lady and got things done, how you respect me and how you respect the women in your life. I mean, for that, I will always be grateful for Mary Holderness.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And again, we've got your mom on.
Yes. And so week. My mom, her name is Peggy Harris. You might recognize her name if you're in the podcast group because she's very active and I love it. And she's amazing. And she was a piano teacher forever and ever. She then became an English teacher. She's now a writer. She's on her, you know, she has had two marriages and both pretty long, and she's on her second, and he's very dreamy. And we get into like the whole, like the divorce from my dad and like how that went down. And it's a really good listen.
We do that. We grill her about Kim's ex-boyfriends, which I always do when I have the opportunity. And then honestly, I think she helps Kim out a little bit, understanding why there really shouldn't be a lot of mommy guilt.
Yeah.
Centered around people who are just doing the best they can.
Okay.
So there's that too.
So let's take a listen. Peggy Harris.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you, Kim?
I'm good. How are you, Mom?
Good. How are you, Penn?
I'm fine. Thank you. Everyone's good.
We've established that. So, Mom,
yes.
How are you feeling with all this? The big microphone in front of your face.
Well, it feels a little strange, but, you know, I've been listening to your podcast all along, and I've always imagined people who you've interviewed sitting here, just, you know, sitting at a table with you, had no idea that there was a microphone a quarter of an inch from their mouth. This is kind of strange, but I'll manage.
Yeah, and so Peggy is a very active member of our podcast group, and I appreciate that, Mom. No, seriously, I appreciate it, because sometimes, you know, some criticism, good critiques will come in, and you'll defend us, and I appreciate that.
I try not to defend you like an angry mama bear. I try to defend you in a kind way, because... Yeah. It's important to be kind.
I'm sorry, I don't read this group. What criticism are we getting from the... I know that we've been accused of being ageist. Well, is there other stuff, or...
Yeah, I did respond to the ageist thing, yeah.
Do you think we're ageist?
I didn't pick up on it, and ageism is a huge thing for me, because I'm old.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on it either, and the main reason why is I don't know what the hell it is. Well, and I'm still trying to figure it out.
It's prejudice against people who are of a different age of you, mostly people who are my age and older.
Got it. Yeah, and I understand the basic definition, but I think, so here's what I was worried about. I like to say, man, I'm getting old.
Right.
Man, I'm old. I'm so old, I'm like going to bed at 8:30. Is that an insult to... old people? Because I am old.
To me, it wouldn't be. No.
No, you're not. But you're not. Okay. So
My daughter calls me old all the time.
Yes. Okay. So here's the thing. This podcast is not about ageism. We did have in our previous podcast a huge segment on it and about how to get criticism. But now we're going to talk. We're going to talk to my mom in honor of Mother's Day. Okay.
Mother's Day.
That was Kim steering away from my conversation, and she did a really good job of it, because I tend to take this podcast off the rails.
Yes, and some, yes you do. I don't know, I was going to elaborate, but yes, you do. Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, who are you?
Oh, you know, thank you for asking me that question. You know, talking of ageism, huh? I'm taking it back to you, Penn. Once you get to be a certain age, and I'm in my 60s now, in fact, I'm well up in my 60s now as of my last birthday, you start to disappear, especially as a woman. There's this disappearing older woman whole phenomenon. We talk about it among our friends who are our age. Mm-hmm. And one thing nobody ever asks us is, hi, who are you? Because we are kind of in the background. So thank you. I think I will answer that question.
I feel like and it's happening as we're getting older too. Like, instead of asking who are you? It's more like, how are you doing? Like,
yes, yes. Yeah, and like then that. The arthritis answers come in.
Yes.
You know?
So try to answer this question without talking about your hip problems.
Right. I know. Just as a little side issue, I was talking with my doctor's receptionist the other day, and she says, and how are you? And I said, well, I'm here, aren't I? And she says, you know, I've got to stop asking that question.
I know,
because every time I ask somebody, I get an organ recital. You know? So what part of the body is going wrong? Now, who am I? Thank you for asking that. I'm a baby boomer. Mm-hmm. I was born in the early 50s, but I graduated high school in 1969. Age of Aquarius, the first walk on the moon. Woodstock was the summer that I graduated. So I went from being the oldest daughter, like almost like I'm trying to say a Mayberry family, you know.
You're the oldest of five.
I'm the oldest of five, all born within 6 years of each other. My mother was always tired.
She's still tired.
She's still tired. tired. Yes. Yes. Yeah, Mima is still tired. No. And so I went from that kind of reading the Bobbsey twins. Nobody in your podcast community is going to know who they are, but it was this classic little set of series books that I was an avid reader, still am, classic set of series books about this perfect little family with a little, you know, C. Dick, C. Jane, C. Spot, you know, those old copy readers. That's what I grew up on. Went from that to by the time I graduated high school, the drug scene, hippies, Age of Aquarius, free love, all of that stuff. And I was confused by the time. By the time I graduated high school and went to college, I was utterly confused. And this is the woman who raised you.
Thanks for telling me now. And then, okay, and so after you went to school, no, first of all, you got married.
I got married way too young to your dad. I got married at the age of 19. I was after my first year of college, and then he was 4 years older than I was, and still is 4 years older than I am.
Continues to be.
Yes, right. And I just did not know who I was, and I don't think he did really either. And we went away to college together. He was an architecture major. I was a music major at the time. I went back later on and got an English degree. But my first time away from home, except for a couple of brief trips, and my first time out of my parents' house. And then I went straight from that into living an impoverished life in a trailer park at the University of Florida. And it was it resonated weird for me, yeah, right from the very beginning.
The marriage resonated weird. If your marriage, note to self, resonates as weird, maybe to start therapy.
I didn't start therapy soon enough. Yeah.
I just want to say, I feel like I shouldn't be asking any questions about this.
Yeah.
No, here's why. Because, you know, there's that thing, because you guys are going to get into marriages and your dad and stuff. Just so you know, there's this rule that you can talk about your family. And the in-laws really shouldn't. They should patiently. They should patiently listen.
Listen, let's clear something up right now. You are as much a member of my family as my own son is.
I appreciate that.
No, really, I'm telling you the truth.
But you know that, if Kim can be sitting, we can be about to go to bed, and she could be like, you know, and this is obviously an example because she'd never say this about you. But man, my mom is really pissing me off right now. Like, let me tell you what. You know what she did? And if I say, oh yeah, let me tell you something else, will shoot me a death dagger.
Right. So the rule for this podcast is only ask questions. Don't make any comments of opinion.
Oh, well, that's boring.
Can I ask loaded questions? Ask loaded
questions.
Okay,
you know what? I don't have anything right now, but I just wanted to check the rules, and we're good. And please continue about your weird marriage. It sounds weird coming from me, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
Okay, so, you graduated... You had a
trailer park.
You lived in a trailer park. I have to say, though, that is like, you'll use that as an example of like, hey, man, I can do this. Like, if things get rough, I can live in a trailer. I can.
Well, and we're talking about literally, we're not today. There are beautiful mobile home communities. They don't even call them mobile homes. Right. They call them manufactured homes. This was a trailer park. You know, this was really kind of a roach infested.
It's not what we
have
today.
A hole in the floor kind of place that we were living in. It was the way that we got to be there at University of Florida and pay our tuition and actually continue to buy food, by the way, which was basically rice and 10 Morton Pot pies for a dollar. That's how long ago this was. And no wonder I gained my freshman 15 by Christmas.
Okay. And then, so music major, you got married, and then you started when did you have... Casey, when did you have your first?
We waited 3 years. So I was 22 and he was, I guess, 26. And then I was 25 whenever I had you. Yeah. So three years for the first one and then two and a half more years until I had you. Right.
Okay.
So, you know, we both kind of took our time a little bit.
Yes, you did.
To get married. And
I'm so proud of you.
For some people, multiple other relationships with people with the same name.
Steve.
Like Steve. I love grilling you about Kim's boyfriends, and we're going to get to that later. But how would you say getting, you know, taking that adult step so early and becoming a mom so early, how did that shape the rest of your life?
It in some ways, I look back on it now, and it's I'm glad that I had children when I had plenty of energy and youth. Mm-hmm. You were both very much wanted, dearly loved, and that is the ever-loving truth. I would say that even if there wasn't a microphone a quarter of an inch from my mouth. On the other hand, I was still a child. And listen, and I was raised by young parents. My mother was 17 when she had me. My dad was 19. Mm-hmm. And so I was basically raised by extremely young people. One might say still, you know, children themselves. Yeah. And then I had this all kind of confusing time of life when I was born and when I graduated high school. And then, so I was kind of a child at the same time. I was growing up along with raising you, but I have to give myself credit. You know, I did have my faith, and I am a woman of faith, and I did have a kind of an inner wisdom that somehow God gave me. I don't know how it happened, but I think I was smart enough right from the very beginning to know that putting you guys first was the most important thing I would ever do. And if I didn't do that, I would later regret it. So in one way, to answer your question, Penn, it affected me in a lot of ways in that I had to delay a lot of the things in terms of my own gratification till after you'd gotten old enough. And I
what
didn't,
things? Tell us about the things.
Okay. So one of the things that I delayed for myself was really doing the job that I wanted to do. I was a music major first only because I was pretty good at playing the piano and didn't know what I wanted to do yet. So I thought I'd start out as a music major. And that was cool. I had an affinity for it. And I thought to myself, this is great. When I have kids, I can teach piano in the afternoon. I can be at home. I can raise my children at home. I don't have to leave them in daycare, which was less frequent back then. You have to remember back in the 70s when you and Casey were born, a lot more stay-at-home moms. And that was a goal. That was a goal of mine.
Is that because in the 70s you could just basically leave them on a burning stove and nobody would like get on you about
that? No,
that
was my generation. My generation, I would ride around in the front seat of my father's car with my arm around my dad's neck, drinking Coca-Cola out of a bottle. That's exactly what we did. But we were a little more safety conscious. And yeah. But then I always thought I wanted to be a writer. I always thought I wanted to be in education somehow, an English teacher or something. But I couldn't picture myself as leaving my kids at a daycare or something and going off and doing my thing. I couldn't at that time in that day and age. Today, there are so many options available. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and today it's like what you do, and if you don't, it's almost like you're like socially denying your kids.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Because it's important for your kids to see you being gratified.
Right.
They can't look at, you know, dad's going out and having the great career and mom is unhappy somewhere.
Right.
And I wasn't unhappy. I need you to know, I took you guys to parks. You remember this? I took you out in your stroller. We went to movies with my girlfriends. And I taught you to read. And I think I was a pretty good mom.
You were an amazing. And I have to say, you were an amazing mom. And I know that now that I'm a mom. And I'm like, holy crap, I'm screwing this up. But I do know that, like, I have, you know, I want to live near, we grew up in Florida. I want to live near a beach again. I love California. We work with a lot of creators and partners that live in California. It would make more sense for what we do to live in California, but we're not, mostly because we have this amazing, easy, very easy life in Raleigh. Our kids love it here. And I'm like, oh, I guess for the length of time, my kids are until they go to college.
You're doing the same thing I did.
I'm like, I'm going to make this sacrifice. I am going to stay put for my kids. I'm like, holy moly, my mom probably did that.
Oh, I did that big time.
I know. Yeah. So like, what if you didn't have us Rugrat kids, what would you have wished you had become or done sooner?
I was telling you yesterday, we were talking as we were going to Lola's play. I would tell my dad was a very, very loving control freak, you know, and he really wanted to have a say in where we went and how he did things and such. And I would start saying, this was AmeriCorps. This was back when people would go off to foreign countries, young people would go off to foreign countries and serve in some kind of medical corps. And I saw myself as doing things like that at the age of 17, 18. And I would bring it up to my family, and my dad would say, no, you can't do that. You might get hurt. You know, I'm working worried about you, that kind of thing. That is what I would have seen myself doing, just taking off, not getting married, going out and experiencing things. So that kind of got shut down for me. And so, yeah, it would have changed completely. But I have this theory about life. I think that no matter what choices you make early on that might have somehow limited you, that you can look back at what you actually did wound up doing. And in most cases, you guys, and go easy on yourselves, I'm talking to your community here, you took what you had and you made lemonade with it. And I did the same thing. I had a really happy life raising you kids. I mean, I'm not looking back and regretting any of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Later on, when you got a little older and you needed me more after school, when I was teaching piano, I went back to school and finished up an English degree so that I could teach high school English and be there with you after school to take you to dance lessons, to take Casey to his BMX races or Scouts or whatever. So I actually completely shifted my life afterwards there. And is that a very 50s mom thing to do? I don't know, but I think I am a product of the culture I grew up in.
Absolutely.
This is super the most I've ever heard you talk about yourself. I know, that's why I'm making this realization. Like, I don't know squat. I think a lot of people don't know enough about their in-laws, because most of the time it's like their job to ask you about you and to look after your kids and to wipe their butts and, of course, to babysit for us when we want to go out and get crunk and not have to worry about paying a babysitter.
Right.
So this is all fascinating. So I really thought when she asked you what would it have been that you could have done, I would have guessed a writer, because I know that's been one of your passions. But you said you wanted to go in AmeriCorps and travel do something in medicine, which I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, I wanted to be a nurse for a long time. Yeah. But I was raised in the 50s when you had basically very binary choices. You had, if you were a girl, born in 1950-ish, you worked. Do you want to work or be a mom? Really? Yeah. I'm not kidding you. And then if you decided later on, well, I'd like to try to do both. Oh, do you want to be a nurse or a teacher?
Right.
Those were pretty much our options, at least where I grew up. I grew up in the South.
Yeah.
You know, by a very traditional family. Now, I'm not saying that other women of my era didn't have lots of choices. I mean, lots of girls I graduated wound up being doctors.
But you didn't have access to those choices.
Personally did not have access to those choices. No.
Right.
No.
So you were married. First of all, you have had two very long marriages.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm coming up on 20 years on my second marriage next month.
Which is like insane.
Yeah.
You were married for 27
years? 27 years to your dad. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was my first boyfriend.
Yeah. That's okay.
The only guy I ever really dated.
Yeah. Yeah. And you obviously are no longer married to him.
No, I'm not.
But you gave it the old college try.
Oh, yeah, for real. Yeah, I think you should. I mean, you need to honor the institution of marriage because it's so important. You need to try. I mean, yeah.
And so tell us what you did to, like, we talk a lot about,
Doing the work
and showing the work. What's the kind of work you did? And then at what point did you realize this ain't working?
Right. Oh, so many points. We went to 5 different marriage counselors. At first, I knew it was unraveling almost immediately because there's this phrase in 2 Corinthians in the Bible, it's called being unequally yoked. Now, that's a specific reference to somebody who's a believer being married to a non-believer, and that's not what I'm talking about here. But, oxen are supposed to be equally, they can both pull about equally, And a marriage is kind of a workhorse relationship in many ways. I mean, there's a lot of ways in which it's supposed to be just plain fun, and let's acknowledge that in the beginning. But you do need to be kind of equally yoked in various ways. And I was so young, it never occurred to me that I was eventually going to be somebody else. And I don't think your dad was either. And so I think when we got married, we were very starry-eyed. We were very much in love. We were both trying to escape something. He was trying to escape his parents' divorce and unhappiness. I was trying to escape a feeling of being controlled. I wanted to have my own life. And then we went right away to school, and it was pressing, just like school is now, and we didn't have computers. Every piece of knowledge that we had to put in our head was from a book that we had had to go find in the library. You know, it was time consuming.
I'm going to use the term Dewey Decimal System.
Oh my gosh.
Because
yes.
I think that's like a generational. If you don't know what that is, you're too young for me to want to talk to you.
Oh, you know, and, and I remember living in the University of Florida library. It was the only building that was open 24 hours at the time. And I remember just being exhausted all the time. And when I came up for air after that experience, I realized that I probably didn't know the person I was, you know, yoked with, that I was married to. He had continued to grow in his direction. I had continued to grow in my direction. And this sounds very cliche, guys, but honestly, I think in many ways we just wanted different things, you know. And that's how it all started to unravel.
Just real quick, 5 marriage counselors.
Yes.
Did you keep changing because you didn't like what they were saying, or did you keep changing because it just wasn't working?
It just wasn't working. Yeah. So each one would end in a trial separation. And the last one ended in, the conclusion.
Yeah. All right. So why did it take 5? Is it because of the kids? Like, why didn't? Okay, so so at one point early on, were you like, "Ooh, I don't know if this is going to work," and then you just kept going for how many years?
27. I mean, we had 27 years. Well, it was. I think we separated at 26, and about a year and a half later, wound up with a divorce. Yeah.
So, but what advice would you give people? Because we are big proponents of counseling and therapy, and counseling and therapy early.
Yes.
Even when things
are going
great. We
didn't start soon enough, yeah.
Yeah. But do you feel, I mean, but now that you're in this really happy marriage, and I can't imagine you being married to anybody else.
Right.
But so there's a happy ending there. But could you imagine if you had started therapy at year one in your marriage, do you feel like you would still be married to?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, your dad is a perfectly nice person, right? We just didn't make good music together. So, and we were unequally yoked emotionally and goal-wise and developmentally-wise and in terms of emotional development and strategic.
I'm going to go on the record and say that I don't think you would have still been married no matter how many marriage counselors, but what sort of things, like, what sort of things when people are shopping for marriage counselors should they be? Because it's a shopping process, right?
It really was for me. What would wind up happening with our marriage counselors is I could tell instinctively that they were taking sides. So 3 of the 5 wound up taking my side without saying so, just by the questions they would ask and the way they would reinforce me and not reinforce him. One of them definitely reinforced him. And then the last one, which was the one that, you know, really opened up things for us, was the one that was truly neutral. So I would say the most important thing is both people absolutely have to feel comfortable that they're being heard. And that's, to me, the most important thing in marriage counseling. So you need to try out marriage counselors, just like you try out a new pair of sneakers, for goodness sakes.
Mm-hmm. Besides being married to a very different person, who we love, Scott. If you're listening, Scott, we love you. What have you done differently in this marriage that didn't happen in the previous one?
Well, first of all, I was in my 40s when I got married, and I knew what I wanted. And I married my pastor. And, you know, I'm a woman of faith, and faith is very, very important to me. And so I would never have found my second pastor. I mean, haven't you told people that you guys met in a bar or something?
Yeah. Right. We have, yeah.
So I don't think I ever darkened the door of a bar in my whole life. Not because I know I've gone to gay bars with you. It's been, yes, I mean, and we've gone to bars, and we've gone to champagne bars in New York. And so I'm not anti-bar. That was not my social scene. My social scene was a different scene, right? So I just want to clear that up. So, and they say that pastors shouldn't marry their parishioners, but here's a man working 80 hours a week, right? He never gets to bars. He never gets anywhere to have a social scene. The only women he has to choose from are the women he sees.
In the choir.
And I was in the choir, and he looked up, he says, "She's the only one without gray hair in the choir. I think I'm interested in her."
Hang on. So I'm interested in this part too, because how does that happen? How does a pastor ask somebody out? Is it like, "Peggy, would you like to get a root beer float with me?" Sorry, that's not a very good. That's not a bad one. Peggy,
we were in, you know, committees together and church activities together. I've always been a church lady. Oh my gosh, I love that SNL sequence about the church lady. Because I've always been one, and so. you know, we just kind of were thrown together in that way. And so we would, you know, wind up talking, you know, what I call trunk talks, standing at the back of your car in the parking lot after a meeting, going on and talking about what you have in common. And it just sort of gradually evolved into, and I remember when we first started going out, I said, there cannot be even the appearance of impropriety. He goes, oh, absolutely. And then all of a sudden, we were full-blown
forbidden love.
Once it started, it was like fully progressed in 2 weeks. It's like, oh my gosh, I think I'm going to marry this guy. It was crazy. And I thought to myself, no, this is not right. Most second marriages fail because it's rebound, it's too soon, all of that stuff. And so I pulled back for something like 8 months. I did nothing. I just said, no. And then, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants. And here we are 20 years later next month.
That's insane.
Yeah. So happy with him. Yeah.
So what do you do? Like, what's the daily that makes it work when the other one didn't?
I was just telling him recently, you're going to laugh at this. I said, you know, honey, I want to give you some real props here. I said, I know that there are ways that I drive you crazy, and you have never, ever just said, Peggy, you are driving me insane. Get out of my face. He has never said that. He turns back to me and he goes, I am glad you recognize that.
So you're nice to each other.
That's what I was leading up to. So.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
My favorite whole verse in the Bible is Ephesians 4:32, which says, be kind to one another. That's the advice I gave you when you married Penn, if you recall. Every new bride and groom, I say the most important thing is be kind to one another. So when you say, what do we do? It really doesn't matter what physically do, although he does start the day does start the day by unloading the dishwasher.
I thought you were going to say he starts the day with something else. That's good. Okay, good.
Oh, no. No. What in the world were you thinking?
You never know.
You never know.
Okay, he does start the day by unloading the dishwasher.
So that's a sign of love.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
And that's not a euphemism for something else, right? Unloading the dishwasher.
Okay. He's literally unloading. He starts the day by unloading the dishwasher, which is a kind thing to do. And from that kindness in the morning, although he never does the dishes at night, but that's by mutual agreement. He just doesn't do them right. Yeah. Anyway, but throughout the day, no matter what it is we're doing, he's always kind to me. And in turn, I try really hard to be kind to him. And my first, I have to tell you, Kim, and you know this very well because I raised you, my default standpoint is snark.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do snark so well.
I don't see that necessarily, but I do snark.
Yeah, I can. Oh, I can be the snark queen.
I doubt that she shows us a lot of the snark. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I don't know that people know how good you are at the snark. Yeah.
I was your teacher, honey. Yeah.
Yes. I do remember you saying, as we were about to get married, just be nice to each other.
Yeah. Be
kind to one another. And I think that comes into play is like we give each other
the benefit of the doubt. Like yesterday, you pointed this out yesterday. So we were grilling out yesterday and I didn't realize that Penn had put all the meat in the oven. He says he told me. I didn't hear it. But I, and so I preheated the oven with all the meat he was going to be putting on the grill. I preheated it to 425. So I was like roasting the T-bones before. And so that for a grill, for a person who prides himself on his grill work, to have preheated meat was not ideal.
It was kind of sweaty meat was the way I would describe it.
But you're like, oh, okay, no big deal. Okay, you didn't, okay, no big deal. And you like took it and you went outside and you said, yes, you, mom was like, you're like, if Scott would have done that to me, I would have lost my cool. And Penn handled that so well. And I think we just, our default is we try to give each other the benefit of the doubt.
Because we're terrified of each other, Penn. We really are. No, we're not. We're not. Honestly, I think it's just practice. I think Kim and I have taken on the profile of a 70-year-old couple because we have literally spent that much time together.
Yes.
If you take like together hours and it's like an odometer on a car, like the average couple who are like in their 80s, like my mom and dad, I think I've spent more time with Kim than my mom has spent with my dad.
It's absolutely true. Absolutely. I wonder how you guys do it. And now that my husband's retired, we're starting to experience what you're experiencing, all Scott, all the time.
How's that going?
Sometimes well and sometimes not. But we, it's one of the, you know, people talk about in retirement downsizing. Okay. We have a four bedroom, three bathroom house. And it's really great when all you kids come home. And I mean, there was a year ago Christmas, I think, that both you and your whole family and Casey and his whole family stayed there all, and everybody had a place to sleep and there was plenty of accommodation. And it was just the most fun in the world. And that's one of the reasons people don't like to downsize, is they want their kids to come home. But another reason I don't like to downsize, don't want to think about it, is it's big enough for us to retreat to our far diagonal corners in the house. And so I do that. And he's learned. See, he's a very outgoing. You and I married the same man, you know. And I married a human golden retriever, and so did you. He just wants to be with me all the time. He loves me. He says, what are we going to do today? Or he wants to go up to the grocery store or something. He says, do you want to go for a ride? And I go, no.
Like your dog?
I'm just like, no, I don't want to go for a ride. I'm busy here. But, you know, so I can retreat to my
corner.
Does
he still have the convertible?
He sold his midlife crisis convertible, and yes,
going on rides with Scott in that thing.
That was he had a little Mazda Miata that he could barely shoehorn himself into.
No, he didn't fit at all in that thing. Neither of us fit into it. We looked like a couple of giraffes trying to get in a matchbox car when we were driving through
there. It was the funniest thing. I wish while he had it that we had gotten a video of him trying to get in and out of that thing. But no, we have when he retired, we got a very sensible Mazda 6 so that we could take long trips to North Carolina and visit our grandchildren. So there
you
go.
Which you do very well, I have to say, as a Grammy. You are a visiting Grammy.
Yeah, I am.
So I know Penn wanted to talk about all my ex-boyfriends, but I feel like we've talked about all my ex-boyfriends.
I'm going to jump right back in now. Because this is good stuff. Because look, when you're married, that spouse of yours is never going to talk the real truth about their exes, right?
And I don't know. Really?
And I'm okay. Like I'm comfortable enough with my situation that I want to hear like what I'm up against here. I know that there was at least one guy who was such a dink to her that it lowered her expectations enough that she actually wanted to go out with me. So that was awesome. We've also talked about like her, like your favorite one was this guy named Alex.
We've talked about Alex.
She starts blushing when we hear about Alex. Alex is the one that sounds to me like was he your favorite? Like no, Kim's shaking her head. Alex was like the baseball star who was like the good looking baseball star who was really nice to you.
Yeah. He was super nice to all of us as a family. He just immediately just kind of blended in with the family, not in a weird way, in a really very nice way. Yeah.
Didn't he used to like buy you stuff?
He did. Remember, I think we talked about the time one time on one of your videos when he actually for Christmas bought me Billy Joel tickets.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, they were up in the cheap
ridiculous.
Seats. They were up in the cheap awesome. Seats. But he was in college. He had no money to do
so
that.
So he like saved up his own money to buy his not even mother-in-law.
Yeah, I was an English teacher at Palmetto High School in Florida, and I had Billy Joel posters all over my classroom. And I don't know if my students thought I was weird or not, but I know they did because they're all Facebook friends of mine now and they keep telling me I'm weird. But I loved Billy Joel and he knew that. He noticed, first of all, which is something like not everybody notices what you like and don't like. Yes. So.
No, this is good. No, you can't have the mic back. We're going to keep talking.
And then he went out and he completed the deal. He got online or whatever he did back then, and he got tickets.
Wow. He like called a person in Ticketmaster and he got tickets.
Yeah, right.
So Alex, I've actually met Alex. I'm cool with Alex. So here's my next question because there's this, have you noticed there's this trash fashion trend that's going back to like 1980s clothes?
Oh, for sure.
And so there's more 1980s music being played in our house, and Kim is wearing more 1980s clothes.
Thank God, like, though, not the 80s hair. Oh, Lord.
I think that's next, but we'll see. Anyway, so Kim will be listening to music and she'll say, oh, this reminds me of Bobby Parker. So I need information on Bobby Parker. Who's Bobby Parker?
I remember Bobby Parker only by name. I don't even remember what he looked like.
Okay, he sounds like a makeout in the Roses parking lot kind of guy.
I think maybe that was your first makeout boyfriend, wasn't it? I think he was.
Good.
Is that when you got mono?
So Bobby Parker gave you mono.
I don't remember. You got mono about that time, I think. Yeah.
We've taken the microphone away from Kim. Whatever she's saying doesn't matter. So, do you remember Bobby Parker?
Now I do. Okay. I remember him now. Yeah. Gosh, was that middle school or was that high school?
It was early high school, but it
wasn't a long relationship. Okay,
but she'll say like, "Oh, Bobby Parker in the parking lot." Like she'll say that like while she's hearing a song by The Cure.
Oh my God!
And so
this is a long time.
So there's an attachment there. So we got Bobby Parker, we got Alex. I know, like I was really close to the three consecutive Steves.
Oh yes, you were right before the three consecutive Steves.
The other one I'm super curious about is the head drummer for Cinderella.
Oh yeah, Freddie somebody or other.
No one can hear you, Kim. We're gonna keep moving here with.
Yeah,
did she at least tell you like, Mom, I'm dating a heavy metal guy?
She told me a lot about that.
Oh good, tell me all about it.
I don't know how much she would be comfortable with. She is still my daughter.
There's not much to tell.
I mean,
we dated one summer.
And you went to a concert and wound up, how did you wind up with backstage passes or whatever?
Well, the bar is really low to get backstage at one of these like 80s, it was like a Poison Cinderella. There was like a four band concert series.
And so the drummer from Cinderella noticed you and you noticed him. And he's like one of these 80s hair band guys. He had better hair than Kim. That's the first rule is you never date a man with better hair than you. That's going nowhere.
We only dated a summer. He was very, very nice.
Yeah.
You're not playing this game very well, okay?
She would call me and let me know how things. I think you flew out to go see him in California or something one time.
Oh,
it was,
wow.
Yeah.
Got kind of serious.
Yeah. It was kind of. He really adored her very much.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
So, like, at any point did you say, honey, I know the stereotype of hair bands. Are you currently injecting something into your veins? Or, like, is there any
here again, I was a church lady and terribly naive about the stereotype about hair bands at that time. I mean, I knew that there are some that had gone haywire and had, you know, freebased and gone down in flaming airplanes and stuff like that. But I also I didn't connect with that. I guess by that time, I had released myself from a constant day-to-day motherhood, which you eventually
do. Kim was an adult at that point.
She was an adult at that point. And also, I raised a very responsible young woman. And I'm telling you, I trusted her at that point. I did not think she was going to make a stupid choice. And I'm not just saying this because, you know, she's sitting here. I would tell, you know, Penn, you and I have great conversations. In fact, I told her that yesterday. I said, you know, when you leave the room, Penn and I have great conversations.
We do. And then she comes back and we're like, shh, Kim's coming back. Shh.
And I would tell you, if Kim weren't sitting in this room, she was a very responsible young woman. And I just trusted her not to date a freak that was going to harm her.
And this guy didn't sound like a freak.
He wasn't.
Pretty cool.
Was a really nice guy.
Although, like, I do want to, like, one of Kim's favorite stories was when she first got to backstage, like she got to, you know, in every movie you see the backstage, like what does it look like in the backstage of a heavy metal band? There's probably like 20 groupies and one guy's on the couch and his shirt's half
hypodermic
open.
Needles.
Yeah. And and he's got a British accent. So, but Kim said that like she was back there before they went on stage, yeah. and whoever the lead singer was, he was doing like scales, like you and I would do vocally.
Well, right.
Like, oh,
how but, cool.
But apparently, like, Kim, do you want to do this or should I do this? Kim was like, yeah, I walked in there, and like the lead guy, he was like in a bathrobe, and he, all of a sudden, like, he was doing his scales, and they sounded like, like kind of like a heavy metal band singer.
He was practicing how to be a heavy band,
he was,
you know,
practicing screaming scales, I guess. And that's my favorite story, whether or not it's true.
Well, of course it's true. I told it to you.
Okay, no, I'm going to give Kim the mic back now.
It was like a summer kind of, they weren't a tour for the summer, so I did occasionally go if they were in Florida, and I would go hang out beforehand and the whole thing. So that's what that was. He was very, very nice.
He was a gentleman.
He was a gentleman.
Yes. That's what I cared about. Those are questions I asked. And,
well, then why didn't it work out with you guys?
Because she met you.
I know.
No, yeah. Nah. You didn't meet me until... Wait, were you still dating him when you met him?
No.
Okay, yeah. So there's some other reason it didn't work out.
Oh, did you meet Steve? No. One, two, three, what?
With Steve, he was after... I don't even remember. But it works out because it wasn't meant to work out. I was meant to meet you.
Amen.
Yeah.
You're not playing fair.
Honey... Gosh, this is supposed to be Mother's Day. We're supposed to, talk about. No, but then I met you. And so weren't you so excited when I brought him
I on? Was so excited about you. So here, let's go back to Mother's Day, all right? When both my children were born, when I was still on the delivery table, and back in those days, they didn't put your baby on your chest like they do now. So I was kind of, you know, looking over to the side, trying to make sure this little thing was actually not blue and it was breathing and everything. But immediately, the first thing I did was to say a prayer. You guys both got the same three-prong prayer, and I prayed it over you and for you since you were born, is that you would find your true purpose in life, your whatever it was, your career or whatever, that you would find the right person, number two, and that you would find your maker in whatever way you could. I was, you know, it was very important to me that you have some basis of faith, and that was my guiding prayer as a parent too. I always thought that it was my job, that I always said you were always on loan to me for 18 to 22 years, depending, you know, and that my whole goal was just to have you stand on my shoulders and fly off. And how did this all start? And now I'm a typical woman in my 60s. I forgot how this started.
No, but just like when I met him, I brought him home.
Yeah. So he was number two. He was the prayer thing for finding the right person. I always prayed that for you kids. And so you started, it was after the summer of Steve's. You had called me in tears and saying, Mom, will I ever meet him? And I knew what you meant, the number two part of the prayer, the one that you were supposed to be with. And go ahead, Penn.
Yeah, like, I mean, what if the right one was there before? What if you just don't know what you've got until it's gone?
I don't get
it. Quoting Cinderella lyrics.
I know.
Right now.
No. Stop. No.
Okay, continue, Mother.
But I told you, I said, he is there. The most important thing I can tell you and tell all moms out there to tell your kids is don't settle for the one that doesn't feel right, right? Don't settle because the next one you meet might be the one. And so you called me one night after you had met him and said, so there's this guy. And the way you said it, you had, with all of your other relationships, you had never talked like that. There was like little tinkly magic dust in your voice when you started talking about him. And so I said, well, what do you like about him? And the first thing you said, oh, what a great sense of humor. I thought, score one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And number two, he really seems to like me. Score two. And I don't remember the rest of the conversation.
He's
cute. Yeah, right. And then I met you soon after. I don't know if you remember that. In a bar.
I met you before we were a
thing. The bar
thing. The rooftop bar.
But you and I were not a thing at that point. Yeah. Like, not even close.
Oh, when was that you met me?
That bar crawl thing.
Oh, yes.
She was like on Steve time, I think, during that time.
Oh,
like
so you guys weren't together then. See, everything.
It's okay. You don't have to know our timeline.
Yeah, okay. That's all right. It was the 12 bars of Christmas in Orlando. I used to live in Southwest Florida at the time. I wanted to see you at Christmas time. And the only time you could find time with your busy, you guys were both together.
Well, we were reporters.
Yet. But you were reporters. And so you were busy in evenings and all kinds of weird times. So what I have always done when I visit you is I fly or drive to wherever you are and I jump on your action train of what activities, and I ride along with you for a while, then I jump off and I go back to where I am. It's still that way now. I'm always exhausted when I come home from the Holder and I trips. And but I remember you said, Mom, I know that you're going to be here this weekend, but we have the 12 bars of Christmas. And that was a, I mean, you can explain that better. That's when all of the TV people, because all of the ABC, NBC, CBS, they all know each other. They all like each other in any given town. And they go out, and so they had hired a bus responsibly, so they weren't driving.
Yes.
And I rode on the bus, so I'm the old woman with all these young broadcasters. And so what I love about you, Kim, is that you wanted your mother to come along with you on that thing. I mean, how many girls in their, what, 20s? You were in your 20s because you were 29 when you married him eventually. How many girls in their 20s would do that? I mean,
well, I have to say, like, I need some advice on, so Lola doesn't, I have a 12-year-old who is, she's inherited my ability for the snark. She's
a master snarker. Oh, my goodness.
She is. And she's very sweet. She's very empathetic. I am raising like a smaller introverted version of myself. But how do I get her to like actually talk to me about stuff? Like there's only certain moods that she'll like, because I think you and I have such a great relationship.
We always talk.
Yeah, we always talk. But I feel like I ask all these questions, and it's like, so who'd you eat lunch with? And who's this? And what's going on here? And it's fine. It's not that we have a bad relationship. It's just that I want details.
So here's the thing.
Gonna need to give it a couple years there, hon.
Yeah, not only that, but that listening to you say that, it sounds like an interrogation to me.
Okay.
You know, it's it does sound like an interrogation to me. And so what I learned very quickly with you was this, that I couldn't jump on board with your relationships with your friends. I couldn't be. I knew instantly from the very beginning that you entered your teen years that I was never going to be in the middle of your relationship. You were going to have your own. It was that whole business of putting you on my shoulders and letting you fly. But I could have my own relationship with you. So when I drove you to a dance a million miles, probably on at least four different cars by the time you finished with all your dance stuff, you and I would have talks about our family life and our life together. And that was the most important thing to me, not finding out what you were doing with your girlfriends. Often your girlfriends were in the back seat because we were carpooling.
Yeah.
Yes, right. So, but yeah.
Yeah. And I do remember like during, because you did do the separation thing.
We were separated, I think, four or five times beforehand. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember you saying a couple times, like, the good thing what you can do, Kim, is like you can make your own life. Like, one, you know, this isn't your final family.
Right.
Like, you get to have your own life and you can make your decision about like the type of person you marry and what your marriage looks like and all this stuff. So, like, this is, and so when I would be upset about the separation, you're like, this isn't where you're going to be forever.
Right.
Yeah. Which I thought was great advice.
And that's so true. You know, and I remember when you were 12 days old, it was the middle of the night, I had pulled you into bed to breastfeed you, and you had fallen asleep on your side, and I was just staring at the perfection that was Kim.
I was perfect.
You were the most perfectly beautiful baby I'd ever seen since I'd had my first one, and I was just so in love with you, with both of you babies. I mean, I love my son so much too, and so this is what I just decided. I thought to myself, oh, if she could just stay this way forever, if she could just be here forever, right here. And then somehow God gave me the wisdom to realize that, okay, later on when you were this adorable two-year-old, I couldn't have had that adorable two-year-old if I had kept you 12 days old forever. And every new person you became, and you became a new person every year, it was like a new gift for me. But I had to do that by letting go of the old. And that's, you know, that's the yin and yang of life. That's the constant, you know, we have to do that. So with family life, it's the same. Lola's different now than she was. I feel the angst for you too, because the snarky Lola, although she doesn't direct it at me, I see it in, you know, when she's kind of directing it around the room sometimes. I miss the one that would jump into my arms when I visited, and that seems like yesterday. I mean, she's taller than I am now. That picture that you put of us on the Instagram, she is taller than I am. I mean, this is crazy. Yeah. So she obviously can't do that, and so she's busy establishing her own space. And that's something that you should say, good for me, I let her do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, very important.
So it's interesting because this is an iteration of Lola that it's transitional, right? She's going from being a girl to
absolutely.
Being a woman.
Absolutely.
And I think parents are sometimes guilty of, like, and especially dads, of hearkening back to those days when she was just that perfect little girl who was daddy's little girl.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how to get myself out of that. Whatever
she'll
happens,
come
what's that?
She'll come back.
She'll come back. I mean, it's not like she's super leaving. Yeah. She's not being, I think yeah. What we're describing Lola as, I've seen a lot worse examples. I think I was worse. Like between the ages of 13 and 15, I was in my room every chance I could get with my synthesizers.
Right.
trying to cook up some new age music for my tour that never really happened. And so, advice to dads, if you've got it.
Yeah. No, and the advice to dads, this is kind of, you know, almost heartbreaking to see a child that you have invested so much in start to do that initial tearing away that is so necessary. So the major advice to dads is the same major advice I would give to moms. Just watch that tearing away. First of all, it's not allowed to be rude. And, you know, and you are still in the position of you are the authority figures in the house, loving authority figures. You always have been. I've known you since you first became parents when I saw Lola at 3 days old. You've always been loving. But your authority figures, and fortunately with Lola, I've never seen her be unkind to anybody. She's the kindest person I know, actually, on the planet. So, but she's figuring out who she is, and so if she is doing this, again, if she's starting to do this tearing away, this, and it feels like tearing, doesn't it? It feels like she's tearing her soul away from your soul, doesn't it? You can almost feel the rip in your heart when it does it. So necessary. So necessary. So in your heart, while you're crying, you say, I'm doing a good job. That's my best advice. There's no easy way around it, Penn. There's no easy answer for it. You just have to let her do it. And then she will come back. I promise you. She's going to be daddy's little girl when you walk her down the aisle. She's going to be daddy's little girl when she graduates from college. She's going to be daddy's little girl when she lays her first child in your arms.
Okay,
I promise
you.
Okay,
now you're making me cry.
She'll always be daddy's little girl. I promise you. Yeah, don't cry, Kim. No, don't cry.
I'm sorry. Okay, I'm stopping.
Yeah.
No.
What's in your mind?
No, it's just, I think, like, the mom thing is hard, and I appreciate how hard you worked for us, and, like, you did give up stuff for us. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a mom's job.
I know, you put stuff on hold, and I feel a little guilty. Like,
oh, gosh, no.
No, I'm just, like, I'm... You know, I don't know if am I not putting enough stuff on hold for them? And
oh, gosh, no, honey. It's a different time. So you did not graduate from high school the year of the moonshot in Woodstock. Times change. And so I would be doing things differently now if I were your age. And all the 20-something moms that might be listening out there who are a generation behind you, they have a whole different set of cultural things that you have to deal with. So the human heart is the only thing that doesn't change. Cultural stuff changes. So what's changed culturally has been your access to living out your career dreams. You have done that, and I'm so proud. I would be so ticked off with you if, after all my sacrifices, you hadn't done that.
Yeah.
You, right? And so you went out and you became a TV reporter, even at the national level, and then you decided to recreate yourself. Here you are in your own home. Penn, you stopped your entire anchoring career, right? So that you could be with your kids more. I mean, that's laudable.
And let me just throw out, I don't feel any guilt. I pat myself on the back every day for what I did.
Right, right.
I'm not sure why you're not, Kim, because you do so much more than most, I mean, every mom does the best they can.
She needs to listen to a Brené Brown video and get rid of the shame and guilt.
Yeah, St. Brené's on repeat. And I think that, like, and it's, but I look at the, you know, we had Lola's little performance yesterday, and
she
was so adorable. But, like, the moms that are, you know, they're organizing, like, the after party, and they brought in baked goods and all this stuff. I'm like, I know. I look at it, I'm like, you know, I can take out the trash. Like,
right.
I'm here now, but I'm not.
In fact, you did. Like, you were in the middle of the party.
She literally took out the
trash. No, she's like, honey, come here. I need you to press the trash down farther.
because I'm not the bake sale mom, and I'm not the, but I look at those women, I'm like, and I do, I try to, and I should say more, I'm like, thank you for being here,
right,
and doing this and setting this stuff up, because I know that I'm not, and I know in my the cerebral level not to feel guilty about that, but it doesn't, it doesn't change the, like, oh man, I'm just not the mom that all the teachers know that come in and volunteer and all that stuff.
You know what? I wasn't either, and I modeled that for you. I was so crazy busy with everything else that I was doing that I did what I was asked to do, but I ran Vacation Bible School a couple of years, and I did children's choir a couple of years, and I did this and I did that, but I always was focused on my home life and what I was trying to get accomplished with you guys. And quite frankly, I didn't give up everything for myself. You know what? When I was teaching piano, I took piano lessons with a master teacher and practiced 3 or 4 hours a day when you were in school. I did that for myself. I think that one of the most important things you can do as a mom is show Lola and Pincharles, this is a healthy mom who's doing things for herself. Don't forget, you can't give up. Radical self-care is one of the best things you can do. Did everybody hear that? Radical self-care is one of the greatest things that you can do for your children. Teach them to, you know, put on your oxygen mask first so that you can take care of them. I know that's so cliche now, but it's cliche because it's true.
Yeah, no, and we're trying that, and we are, and I tell the kids all the time, and this is something else you told me, that like what happened between you and my dad, you're like, we did the best we could.
We did, in the time we had, at the time we were living, at that stage in our lives, we both did the best we could, and we were just not the right people to be together. And the good news is this. We are happily remarried now, both of us, for long periods of time, to people who are in love with us, and we love them. And so we have happy families. Am I excited that you have two sets of parents to visit on holidays, or that's complicated and that's no fun. And that's the reason I stayed with your dad for so long, by the way. Every Christmas Eve, I checked off another year. Because you didn't have to wake up and split a household. And that is that. Yeah, I know what you're going to say. That was just a terrible thing for me to do. But that was where I was at that time. I think subjecting you for the other 364 days of the year to an unhappy marriage was a stupid thing for me to do. It just was. And I kicked myself for doing it all the time because Christmas morning wasn't worth it. But in my immature mind at that time, that's what I thought. Yeah, I got to keep the kids together for the holidays, for the family. People in my family, oh, there was shame here, Brene Brown. There was shame here. People in my family don't get divorced. The first time I had told my parents that I thought I was going to leave your dad, my mother she says, nobody in our marriages and our family has ever been divorced. And I was like 5 years before I raised the subject again, because I thought about that for 5 years, like nobody in our marriage has ever been divorced. Divorce is so much more commonplace nowadays and people talk about it openly, but it was still a shame thing whenever I went through it. It really was. And when I first started thinking about it.
I thank you in that I did not have to do what a lot of kids have to do, which is like pack a bag every 2 or 3 days and go back and forth and all that stuff. But also, yeah, I don't know that I would want to put you through the other 365 or 4 days a year.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you didn't. Yeah. There's no answer.
Let me like Dr. Phil in here really quickly. You guys, you guys were both trying to feel guilty about each other.
We are.
You're shaming yourselves in front of each other.
Right.
Really, you're both just doing the best you can. Okay.
I need to
recognize that. No, it's, yeah, I'm like sitting here. It's like watching a tennis match. You're like, oh, I wish I'd done this. And Kim's like, well, I wish I'd done this. And you're like, oh, I wish y'all both did a good job.
Yeah.
Pat yourselves in the back. It's Mother's Day, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. No, I know.
Lots to celebrate, don't you think? We took this thing called life and we picked up the messy parts and we dealt with them and we picked up the great parts and we celebrated them. And at the end of life, you know, and here I am in my 60s. I hope it's not imminent, but you think more about end stage things now at my age than you do at your age. I look back on all of it, and all in all, I mean, I would have married this guy again if it meant that I was going to have you. And I'm not kidding you that, you know, and I probably would have left him sooner. I think there's enough of my first marriage in this podcast.
No, I know, I know, I know. But we do talk a lot about marriage in this podcast.
Yeah.
And we talk about mostly, and I think because I have seen that, you know what I mean? Because I've seen that. That's that, and I'm trying to, like, divorce proof is not an actual, like, you can't divorce proof a marriage, but if you could, we're trying real hard.
You guys are amazing, and I am a witness to that. Scott and I talk about your marriage a lot. I mean, I never worry about you, Kim. I just don't. I remember whenever you guys were in New York before you got married, and you had been visiting, and I put you on a plane back to New York, and I turned to Penn as we were taking the bags out of the back of the car, and we're saying goodbye to you. And that was at a period of time when I was really missing you. You were gone a lot. And I said, Penn, I just want you to know that because she's with you, I don't have to worry about her anymore. Thank you so much. And I still mean that. I mean, you guys, I wish for, on this Mother's Day, I wish for every mother out there to have a person in her life who's like him, and not like him exactly, but who's like him in ways that just pure love, pure support, pure kindness. And if you can find somebody like that, grab him, because somebody else is going to grab him if you don't first, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know. I do. So on this Mother's Day, honey, we're thankful for you.
We are.
Yeah, how did that just, this? That's next month.
Yeah.
We'll do that next month.
Yeah,
who are we going to get on for Father's Day? Maybe my brother?
Yeah. We'll circle back to that. Yeah, we'll circle back.
Exactly.
No, but thank you for all the things that you sacrificed.
Oh, thank you, sweetie.
And thank you. And I remember when I was like, I had colicky babies and I was like bouncing up and down. I'm like, oh my God, my mother did this for me.
You were a wretched colic baby.
I know, but I'm saying, but I was like, holy crap. I had no idea what you had to do. And I was like, from that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't say thank you enough. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, baby.
I love you. If you made it to this point in the podcast, maybe take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram.
And Peggy and Kim, happy Mother's Day to you guys.
Thank you.
You are shining examples of how to raise a child.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It, across two generations. Kim, you doing it now. Peggy doing it across the exact same timeline as Forrest Gump, apparently.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Aren't you basically Forrest
Jenny,
Gump? No, you were explaining your raising, and it was all Forrest Gump stuff. It was like segregation, Vietnam,
the
moon landing. Like,
yeah,
that
was me.
You're Forrest Gump.
I'm Forrest Gump, but I was raised in the Bobbsey twins in my formative years, so crazy.
You're Forrest Gump minus the running.
Minus the, oh gosh, I can't run my hip.
magic legs.
Okay. Bye.